Call a regular meeting of Savannah County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
Two additional items, Mr. Chair. Yeah, of course. Let me pull up the agenda here. So there's two additional action items we'd like to add to the 7 o'clock meeting. One is about the potential amendment of our zoning ordinance regarding signs, and then appointment of a project consultant for the James River Water Project. We'll brief you on both of those for consideration. One is just directing the Planning Commission to take a look, and so we'll have it. It's on your agendas under 7 o'clock, so they're on your agenda already.
Right. Okay.
But those are new since we published the package. So.
All righty. We have an announcement of the agenda, so may.
Second.
We have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. 4-0. And one last time.
Indeed.
Mr. Dimple.
This is the ultimate brief.
It
won't be long. I didn't say long, I said ultimate. Penultimate was last meeting, so. Just a few things to report, Mr. Chair and members of the board. The Social Services Board hosted a luncheon on the 24th, last Monday, prior to their regular meeting, to honor Tom Payne for his service on the Social Services Board. He was on the board for 8 years and had provided great service and support for them as both vice chair and chair and regular member. And also, Renita Watson, one of the supervisors at Social Services, was selected by the Virginia Social Services Department to assist with testing and application of the new Medicaid case management system. And so it was really quite an honor to be selected for that. And she was one of the ones that helped the state get that kicked off. And when they celebrated that on the 18th of June, the governor's chief of staff and the HHR secretary and others were there to honor those folks that helped with that testing and preparation for the new system. So thank you to Ms. Watson and to Mr. Payne. And then summer reading process is underway at the library. As always, there's hundreds of kids that come and hundreds of kids and adults that come. You can see the packed rooms whenever they do this. This was the universe of stories that followed by a party magic. The magician came in, and then they also did the slime party. I'm not sure I'd want that in my house, but it looks pretty fun.
Oh, man.
The fairy gardens was a huge hit, they said. And then the one-man band, he's been here before a number of years, I think, and he's always been really popular, and people coming along to sing and dance along with him. And then the sensory play. Again, that one's definitely not coming to my house. But it looks like a lot of fun. If I were that little kid, I would be having fun, too. And the parents loved it because they got someone to trash somebody else's house, not their own. Some erosion control efforts were done at the dog park. Below where the dog park is, as you go down to the trail, the main trail, there's been a lot of really severe erosion over the years. And we had a contractor come in and do a substantial change in the swales and the drainage and the way the paths are laid out. So that project has been completed now, and we'll watch it through the first couple rains. We're hoping that will take care of it. It really was damaging the trails such that it was difficult for handicap accessibility on those trails, and that's where the handicap accessibility starts, is over there by the dog park. So the contractor did a pretty good job. I'm really appreciative of that. Hopefully it'll hold up really well. And then Muni Code is now live on the county website. That's the electronic version of the county code. It's searchable, printable, and portable, and you can use it on your desktop or your phone or your tablet. And really special thanks to Fred's office, but in his office, Donna DeLoria and Christina Hoffman, to our assistant county administrator, Kelly Harris, and to our purchasing officer, Cindy Toller. All of them worked really hard in this for months to make this happen. And I'll show you what menu code on the web looks like now.
Yeah,
When you get onto our county website, come on, machine. This is the landing page you'll get to. On the county website, it'll take you to this page. And on there, let's say that you wanted to look up something about erosion and sediment control. You can just go to that chapter, and there's the entire county code. And it looks almost identical to what it looks like in print version for the board. But let's go back to here, and let's say we want to look up things about dogs. So we'll see where it talks about dogs in the county code. And there's all the portions of county code where it talks about dogs, and it's a pretty easy way to search and find information about it in our county code. If you want to look up signs, or let's say temporary signs, since we'll be talking about that tonight. So there's where general provisions of their signs permitted, the rules of construction and definitions, and about signs, so temporary signs. Now, if you want to do just temporary sign, you put that in quotes, then it'll go just those words, temporary sign, rather than temporary and sign. But it's a great way for folks that don't use the code every single day to be able to find things and to know what's in there. And you can, when you pull up a code section, for instance, let's say I wanted this fence law, I wanted to send that to my office so I could remember, or send it to a citizen who had a question about it. Then you could go over here to the right and you can print it. You can download it as a Word document. You can email it to somebody, or you can compare versions between old and new. And so all that's available just to the fingertip there. And so it's a pretty, and you can send a hyperlink to someone to go right to that page if you want them to, hey, take a look at this code section. And so it's pretty useful. And we still have the master copy that's in Mr. Payne's office that is our official legal copy. We send changes into these folks, and then they update it into MuniCode, our version, whenever those are updated. And then it also shows online anything that's changed recently, and it'll compare between current versions and old versions as we do updates. So we're appreciative of that.
I just threw my old notes away. Thank goodness.
Yeah, this will be up to date and very simple. I just love it because I can grab it from my iPad or my phone pretty easily, wherever I am, pull it up and go through code sections. So thanks to all those folks that made that happen. And two new people, one kind of not so new, Starpu Auli, is coming back down from the treasurer's office to the finance department. She's can't decide whether she wants to go uphill or downhill, so she's back downhill. And works in finance again with going back in her old position, financial services technician. And so the finance department is complete again with all her staff. That's a great addition. She knows our systems inside and out. And Douglas Miles, who you met at a meeting a couple weeks ago, is our new director of community development. He comes to us from Prince George County, and we're delighted to have him on board. He's already made a really positive impact and started last Monday. Brings 25 or 26 years of experience in planning and zoning, and that's a great help for all of our staff downstairs, and certainly for myself and my successor. And then remember, you've got some special meetings coming up. July 9th, next Tuesday, a week from today, you've got a special meeting. You'll be in here with the Planning Commission only for a short time, just for the public hearing portion, and then you can stay or not, but you'll convene your meeting for the public hearing, and after the public hearing, you can adjourn. And then you're back on regular schedule in August again with the first meeting in August on August 7th with your work session that evening, and then regular meeting on August 21st. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Andy? Thank you very much. We do appreciate it, sir.
Thanks.
There are no public hearings moved to 7 o'clock, so we'll now move forward with action matters.
Yes, back to public comments, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped public comments. I have to check that out for you. All right, we'll now open our first round of public comments. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic directed towards the board. Please state your name when you step to the podium. Is there anyone wishing to address the board at this time?
Rudy Garcia from the Fork Union District. I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about your county administrator.
I hope the new one.
No, you. I had the privilege of meeting Steve in 2011 when we both attended the Fluvanna Leadership Development Program. And since then, we've had really good working relationship in a number of different areas, both in my job as the leader of the FLDP program and in the chamber and in Rotary. One of the things that a lot of folks may not realize is how important Steve's contributions were to the county in moving us along the continuum of technology. One of the first things he did when he got on board was to automate and make it easily searchable a list of all the volunteer organizations in the county. From there he moved and they created fan mail, which is an electronic way for the community to learn about what's going on. As you can see, the move now to the Muni Code kind of completes that circle where everything that can be automated and can be put electronically has been done. I don't think we would be there without Steve's leadership. He has been a great friend to me and Catherine personally. The work that he's done in building bridges throughout the county has been remarkable. Prior to his arrival, I don't think the county administrator and the Chamber of Commerce spent nearly as much time together talking about what's going on with businesses in the county. He attended almost every one of our Chamber of Commerce breakfasts or luncheons, and if he couldn't come, he would send one of his representatives. He has been a remarkable asset to this county, and I just wanted to go on record both as a private citizen and as a community leader to thank you, Steve, for everything that you've done.
Anyone else? Seeing no one, I will now close the first round of public comments, and now I will move forward with action matters. A, EdTech, Charter Amendment, Brian Rothmel.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, sir.
Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council is making some changes, was requesting some changes to the charter. You'll hear an update from them later on this evening from the chairman about what they've been working on and where they want to go moving forward. Some of the changes that we're including, we're asking to add one more member to the council membership. Also, that would be including the Farm Bureau. We currently involve some community groups such as the Chamber and Historical Society, so adding a Farm Bureau member. Also asking, instead of being one from each election district, preferably one from each election district, as you'll see in the boards and commissions appointments, there's a couple people from the Fork Union District that want to join, so we're getting a lot of good workers. We don't want to exclude people that are in the same district because we can then use their background and their knowledge to make decisions. Also change just in the Economic Development Office representative for the membership. Other changes include they would like to present to the Board of Supervisors semi-annual updates on what they've been working on, preferably in October and March of each year, and also added just some descriptions of the chair, vice chair, and secretary. Any questions?
Any questions?
No questions.
Thank you very much.
You did a good job on their podcast. When was that
done?
Last week?
Friday.
Yeah,
it's an I Love Seville Facebook podcast, and it's live. And he and Keith Smith, who also from Fluvanna County, worked on there with Jeffrey Miller?
Jerry Miller.
Jerry Miller. Yeah. It was actually quite impressive. I sat in the office while I was doing meetings and going back and forth and doing things and watched it live. And it was really impressive on what Brian talked about, and helpful with Keith Smith, because Mr. Smith knows a lot about our county and about economic development too.
Yeah, Keith has a weekly show, and he wanted to talk about Fluvanna County and asked if I'd come on talk about Zion Crossroads and what we got going on.
I have it in my phone.
All right. Good hour.
Oh, wow. About me talking
about it. They even talked about you.
I did not bring that up, but Jerry brought it up about baseball. He called you Mad Dog. Called you Mad Dog, Mike Sheridan.
They actually were talking about they'd seen your picture in the post office recently.
I'm quite certain that I've been here before. Thank you very much, sir. We do appreciate it. All right. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the revised Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council charter as presented.
Second. Motion is made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. B, purchase of Fluvanna TMP 51A-130. Mr. Nichols.
So this is the purchase of the parcel that's to the south of the community center in Fork Union. That will be contiguous with the other parcel that we own, the community center and parcel farther back. And so this is the first of those three parcels that are under consideration. This one, we already have a signed agreement with the owner of this parcel, and it's about nine acres, and it fronts on Highway 15. So this is one we've talked about multiple times in the past.
The only purpose of your being here is just to provide a record that the board has ratified Mr. Nichols' signature on the contract.
Any other question? All right, do we have a motion?
I move to ratify the contract for purchase and to accept at closing the deed of conveyance of Fluvanna tax map parcel 51A-130 from Robert H. Shelton, subject to approval of the form of all documents by the county attorney. I further move to authorize the county administrator to execute the deed to evidence such acceptance and to execute any other documents he deems necessary or appropriate in connection with the purchase, all containing such terms as may be approved by the county administrator.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0. C, FY20 Social Services Pay Plan. Ms. May.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So I am here this evening to propose a pay plan for social services staff. As you know, historically, we have gone through a lot of turnover and struggled with retention. And so over the last few years, we've been looking at several ways to remedy that. And one of the ways that we've been looking at is by improving salaries for our staff. And probably it was four years ago, we did an internal alignment and did some targeted pay increases for our staff to bring them closer to where the state recommends they should be. This year, during budget season, when the county was looking at doing some targeted pay increases, they looked at some targeted pay increases for some of our staff, and what we found out was we couldn't do it because it didn't fit in with our comp plan that we have with the state. So we've been talking with the state and found out that the way to do targeted pay increases for our staff is through an internal alignment, which we did about 4 years ago. And so we conducted the internal alignment, and what we found out when we did it was that we had about 15 staff, which is a little less than half of our staff, were somewhat under what the state recommended they should be. And you can see that that ranged from 2.76% to 48.3% under what the state recommends. And so we met with county staff, we met with Mr. Nichols. Based on the results, we presented some options to our social services board, and we came up with a proposal that includes funding the internal alignment at 100%. And so what that means is if an employee falls 5% under where the state says they should be, they could get a 5% increase. The maximum per year per employee is 10%. So if an employee is more than 10% under, they could only get a 10% increase to an internal alignment in any 1 year. So we sat down, and Mr. Nichols helped us create a spreadsheet that looked at each individual employee and how much an alignment would be of their current salaries. And the total cost to do 100% alignment would be $58,756. And you can see the federal match at 34% would be $19,977. The local match would be $38,779. And we also found out we get our state budget in May. And the county was anticipating getting $15,000 in state and federal revenue to go towards the 3% COLA. And what we found out was we are actually going to get $25,000 in state and federal revenue to go towards the 3% COLA. So if we applied that $10,000 to the local match of the $38,779, it would be a total, we would need $28,799 in local funds to implement the alignment.
Are there any questions?
No, I sit on the board for the Board of Supervisors, and it's very complicated working with the state and what they make us do. So I think that we're just getting caught up with what we needed to do maybe a few years ago. So I would recommend that we approve this.
Where are we seeing that $10,000 additional state federal revenue, $10,000? Was that another allotment there?
No. So, Mr. Weaver, in your budget this year, when we did the budget balance worksheet during budget season, we put up on that top section additional revenue we think we'll get in based on what pay plan you all approve. So we put in a wedge there for social services, the state portion of the 3% that you all approved, and we also put a wedge there for the state portion for the constitutional officers people. Well, the wedge we put there, because we thought that's what it was at the time, was $15,000. So they're actually, when she got the report in this spring, because it's after our budget season's done, the allocation from the state will actually be $25,000 rather than $15,000. So that's the $10,000 net difference to the positive that the county will accrue. But you only budgeted for $15,000 in revenue. You're actually going to get $25,000 in revenue.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the offset. I'm very appreciative of Ms. Mabe and her staff going through this and spent a lot of time with myself and our HR manager and our deputy county administrator and finance director to kind of go through this, because this is really out of sequence. We normally do these things during budget season, but social services is on a different schedule necessarily because of some of the stuff that the state does. So while I would hope that this would be done in January or February next year so we can build it into the pay plan, I think the plan is really good. It makes sense to me, and the way they went through and calculated the relationship to that person to their salary band and their salary in that pay band made a lot of sense, and it was consistent. So we think it's a reasonable approach. Just the timing is not so good, but because it's out of sequence, because you didn't build it into budget, recommendation from staff is that you would take this from personnel contingency, because that's what personnel contingency is for, and then it doesn't affect your tax rate. It's built into your tax rate because you're using it from that. That way it's built into your baseline budget for the following year. And so that's why personnel contingency is recommended. And you've got sufficient funds there. You budget $75,000 in personnel contingency every year.
Did you say someone was 38% coming? Mm-hmm. So they can only get 10%.
And so actually, there are four people who are more than 10% under, so this alignment would bring everyone except for four employees up to where the state recommends they should be salary-wise.
And that can be addressed next year as well, can't it?
It could be.
Incrementally, yes.
But why would someone take a job that was going to pay like 48% less than they are in other places?
Get that experience so that they can jump over.
That makes sense.
Or they choose to live here.
They choose to live here, and the benefits are good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ready, I'll make a motion. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the proposed social services FY20 pay plan, including targeted pay raises for employees, consistent with recommendations from the internal alignment not to exceed 10% per employee, with the state and federal contribution being $29,977 and the county contribution being $28,799. And approve to accept the supplement appropriation of $29,977 from state and federal funds.
Got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The chair votes aye.
Thank you,
Ms. Mabry.
D,
SCADA Services Project Amendments 1 and 2, Ms. Dole.
Good afternoon. All right, SCADA Services. SCADA Services, again, is the system generally refers to an industrial computer system that monitors and controls a process, in our case, our water and sewer system. The board approved the term contract with eMERGE Systems on June 19th, and these two projects that I'm presenting tonight are the first two projects towards Zion Crossroads, getting it up and running. One thing to note on both of these task orders, the dollar amounts are only for the design. The actual materials to build the panels will be built separately, but they will be built at actual cost. There's no markup, and the company can't mark up any prices for us. What they pay for them is what we pay for them. Number one. Fluvanna DNC SCADA Infrastructure Implementation. This is the distribution and collection for the wastewater collection and water distribution systems. The agreement provides the county with a system to monitor and track all of the water and wastewater assets in Zion Crossroads water and sewer system. Including in the submittal, the O&M manuals and the as-builts, implementation, programming, on-site checkout, startup, and training support as needed. The system will also include features such as recording data, an alarming system, ability to monitor remotely from a smartphone, so we don't have to have our employees on site all the time, ability to change settings of the system for all of these facilities. Key proposed tasks include the review of the overall design to support future growth, development system architecture, detailed design, visualization of server for efficient maintainability, HMI server / workstation and network installation integration, DNC report development and deployment, an alarm and event paging system, and provide training on as-built documentation to county personnel. This project agreement total cost is $133,535. Number two, WOPS and WWOPS RTU infrastructure implementation. This is going to provide the county with the hardware and software for the control panels at the wastewater pump station and water booster station and the elevated tank. It also includes setting up this cellular communication with all the sites that will allow the system to communicate with the central SCADA system, which was the first task, and the control systems that will be able to communicate with each other. The solution is based on an Allen Bradley Schneider PLC-based remote terminal unit control panel. The task also entails development control sequence based on specifications developed by Dewberry, our engineers. And eMERGE will provide all the necessary engineering services, including the system design and development, implementation, programming, on-site checkout, startup, and training support. This project cost is $137,842.50.
And there will be a test later.
Yes. That's a lot. Any questions?
Now, all of these things are outside of where the... It's up at Zion Crossroads.
Yeah. All of this is Zion Crossroads.
Right. And someone has to go in to monitor that, or does the software?
The software.
The software monitors all of that and lets us know when there's a problem or whatever. Would it ping me at night and tell me something?
I don't want it to ping me.
Well, not you, but.
It might tell me to climb a tower.
It won't ping you, but yes, that's what this will do. It'll be an alarming system, and it'll be built in who it's supposed to contact.
Yeah, I'm waiting until the conversation is over. Okay, on this Sam's Crossroad project, you said it's budgeted within that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you think it maybe be a good idea if we know what the balance then is left in that project then? I mean, I'm sort of curious where
something
we are.
Something that we can do?
Because it looks like maybe we're on some of these projects later on, we're going to be going over maybe some of these balances.
We're not over on anything yet on the project.
No, not yet.
Yeah, we'll have finance pull that up and just add it to each one of these packages.
I like the part about being able to, I don't have to walk in and do it personally. It shows up on my phone. I know that's made a difference at the schools.
Oh yeah, this is state of the art.
With our lights, mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to be there to hit a switch.
Right.
There's three people in the school system, and if they can punch it in on their phone, and Mr. Wills can be sitting at home and go, "Oh, I can call them and say, 'Man, dude, I forgot the lights on. Can you get those things?'" And I don't have to drive back to Ken's door and he just goes, "Poop."
Yeah. Well, and part of it is that our water systems are so separated in the county. You know, we've got everybody down at Fusdy, here in Palmyra, and now Zion Crossroads. It'll make it a lot easier on them when things come up.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't design a system today without these, but yes, Mr. Weaver's right, and that'll be good. We'll add a chart to each one of these. Whenever there's a project agreement that adds to the ZXR system, we'll have the running total of the projects on the various different lines.
Yeah, we'll have a chart. I'm going to ask that same question a little bit later on, too.
Sure.
Some others.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything
Thank
else?
Thank you very much.
All right.
Any other questions, comments?
No.
All righty, do we have motion number one?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve the project agreement number one between Nevada County and Emerge Systems, Inc. and Nevada DC SCADA Infrastructure Implementation in the amount of $133,535 and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreements subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. How about number two?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the project agreement one between Nevada County and Emory Systems, Inc. for WAPS and WAPS RTU infrastructure implementation in the amount of $137,842.50 and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Book. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, ma'am. E, as you're not going very far.
Nope.
Dewberry Engineers Incorporated, Project Agreements 2, 4, and 5.
I'm going to be your favorite person tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
So these project agreements have to do with the water and sewer master plan. The Board of Supervisors in 2018-19, the strategic initiatives and actions under C2 was to complete a master water and sewer plan phase one to identify sources for the county's long-term water needs, particularly in each of its community planning areas. These projects are important components that address the long-term needs for Fluvanna and the water sewer master plan for all the county utility systems. These are not only Zion Crossroads. These are for Fusdy and the Palmyra system as well, and some of it for even other systems that may come into the county later. Project agreement number two, this is for the utility standards manual update. Public Works has crafted a draft utility standards manual to be used for all Fluvanna County water and sewer projects. These standards require review and updates to make sure that they are consistent with industry best practices and with our requirements. A utility standards manual represents the water and sewer system standards that will be used for the design of all public water and sewer systems in the county. Total project cost on this is $28,670. Second, or the project agreement number four is for the asset management plan and billing rate and capacity fee analysis. Through the asset management plan, the county wants to identify the and estimate timeframes for future replacement projects, as well as compile all operational costs. The future improvements will be incorporated in the water and sewer master plan in order to consolidate it to one implementation plan. Once the projects from the master plan have been identified, billing rates will be analyzed to ensure operational costs are adequately covered, while the capacity fee analysis will be performed to verify fee structure allows for the county to meet the future goals. Recommendations for rate adjustments, if necessary, will be made in order to meet the financial goals and future needs. This task will include the development of an asset management plan for the county's FUSD, Palmyra, and Zion Crossroad systems. Total cost on this project is $76,600. And for number five is the total water and wastewater master plan. Evaluating the existing water and wastewater supply, distribution, treatment capacities in order to develop a plan for the system expansion and upgrades to accommodate growth over a 30-year planning period. They'll be grouped by short-term, 1 to 5 years, medium-term, 6 to 10, and long-term, 11 to 30 years, and then the ultimate build-out, which will be beyond 30 years. Any available water and water supply and wastewater treatment capacities for Zion, Crossroads, Fork Union, and Palmyra, and any others will be analyzed in comparison to the project population growth and water sewer demands. This total project cost is $130,300. Any questions?
Yeah, it's more money question. Mm-hmm. You have unassigned fund balance. Mm-hmm. Is that, did you not designate it originally for something other than that? I know Tony has always been concerned about the about that unassigned fund balance, and I'm wondering where we are on that. I noticed that you're actually taking $235,570 mm-hmm. against the $3,316,789. Was that not designated in some other category rather than the undesignated fund balance?
It was not previously budgeted for.
So this is money over and above what we originally.
Yeah, again, this is not just for Zion Crossroads. This could not have gone to the Zion Crossroads projects because it does not include just Zion Crossroads.
For 5 years, we've been talking about doing a water and sewer master plan for the county, and then a rate study for the county, and then an operations manual, and also then a utility standards manual. So if someone adds on to our, let's say, build a subdivision, and they want public water and sewer, and they tap off our system, we have to tell them what size pipes, what type of ductile iron they need to be, what type of connections they need to be. It's all the construction standards for them, for us to then be able to take that into our system and operate it. So this has never been budgeted because we had no idea what these were going to cost. So these have always been just planned, and this is now the first time they're actually being presented to you because we've got a contractor that's given us the price on these. And so they're now presented for approval. They're separate and distinct from the Zion Crossroads project debt service because these are countywide functions. They just happen to include Zion Crossroads, but they include all our water and sewer systems. And so it's definitely out of unrestricted fund balance.
Would it be fair to say that a lot of this work had previously been anticipated to be done by Mr. Stevens?
No, all the work that Mr. Stevens was going to do has already been done. That's what the basis for all this is. So the utility standards manual that he wrote, he brought multiple with him and he pulled from here and there. He put the baseline together, but we always have had to have an outside engineering firm come in and clean those up, buff those up, evaluate them, and then do the master report for the entire county. We can't do those internal, the amount of time and effort and energy would take. So he was just doing the prelims.
This is where he would come to us when he did fuzzy things and said, now this is just the beginning. We're going to have to come back and look at this entire thing for the whole county.
Exactly. And the next fuzzy rate, I just learned this yesterday talking to Mr. Dahl, the next fuzzy rate increase we probably should have really done it last fall to you, because we'd set it in a 2 or 3 year time period. But this study will give you that same number and will tell you what you need to be doing over the long term for the Fort Union Sanitary District, and what rate increases we need to build in to manage our system, what the operational costs are, and what the capital costs are down the line to replace the system in a timely manner.
And that's what McKent was doing to keep them from falling back into
Absolutely. Yeah, and he did a fantastic job, because they're in the black really well now, and they paid back all the money they owed to the county. So
they're in good shape.
Yeah, and one of the reasons for that was not just because they got so much more efficient, because they weren't terribly inefficient before, but it's everybody's salary and all the costs associated were all charged to the Fort Union Sanitary District, except they weren't all Fort Union Sanitary District charges. So when you pull those out and reclassify them to the correct place, Palmyra Sewer, or the other sewer systems, or water systems, or just FUSD, we now take everyone's salary and classify it to where they work. If they work 40% at Zion Crossroads System, then 40% of the salary gets charged to that function, and 60% of the salary maybe to the FUSD system. But it really depends on how their time is spent. And Mr. Stevens built a really good algorithm that Mr. Dahl helped him with, that shows if right now 40% of this person's time is attributed to FUSD, 55% is attributed to Palmyra Sewer, and 5% is attributed to Zion Crossroads. We adjust those every year now. Next year will be a big adjustment, because Zion Crossroads will be coming online. We'll talk a little bit later on tonight that we have to kind of completely rethink our public utilities operation. There is no such thing as FUSD or Palmyra Sewer or Zion Crossroads. There is only Savannah County Public Utilities. The only reason that FUSD is a unique thing is because it gives you a special taxing authority for that district. But that's the only reason.
Well, bonds were voted upon, and the people decided on which bonds they wanted. Fred knows that better.
Yes, completely agree, sir. But that's only because it was a district, and that's a special taxing
authority. And they had their own boundary lines, too.
Right, indeed they did. But the boundary lines have never been observed, because they're serving people outside of the Fort Union Sanitary District. And have been for decades.
Right, but they pay their own.
They pay their water and sewer bill, but they would never be subject to the district taxation if you put special taxation in. But the point is, you have utility systems, public utility systems, in multiple places in the county. It's just part of Flavanna County's public utility system. There may be some unique features to them, like a special taxing district that you could use, and you may set the rate there different than the rate up here. But that's what these studies are intended to do, is to look at the entire system, and then we'll realign our assets to support all those.
Do we not have an operational wedge for the Zion Crossroads water system?
Yes, you do. Right.
And would that? Why would this not be an operational wedge?
No, these are not. Yeah, these are not day-to-day operations costs. These are really the capital is too strong to say, but they're really front-end one-time capital costs. It's when you create your master water and sewer plan, it's like writing, it's like writing the comp plan, and then you follow that, and every few years it needs to be bulked up. This is the first comp plan for water and sewer systems, essentially. And so it's not part of the day-to-day operations, and the operations cost for up there will be for, you know, parts, valves, salaries, fuel for the vehicles, things like that.
When was our last water study completed?
2010 was the 50-year water supply plan for the county of Flavanna.
50-year?
Uh-huh.
Who did it?
Timmons, I think, was the primary contractor on there. And that was required because all the counties had to submit them to the state in that time frame. We submitted ours in 2010, and Louisa submitted theirs in 2011. That's what we use as the basis for the James River Water Authority project, too.
Go ahead.
But that's a uniquely different thing than the Master Water and Sewer Plan. They both inform each other, but they're two separate standalone documents and have two separate functions. But they do inform each other. So like your county code says you have to do XYZ, but your comp plan informs how we want to do those things and how we want developers to bring information to us or where we want them to do things. It's not law, it's plans. And the same way in these cases.
So the 50-year plan Would that be the comp plan, or is this?
No, 50-year water sewer, water supply plan is a plan required by the state, by all the localities that have to be turned in, that talks about what we see as the future of water needs for our county, where and what size and what population growth will happen, and where you'll need water coverage, so that they can tie that to all the other localities to say, okay, here's the kind of overarching big rock water needs for the county, I mean for the state. So we have to be careful to not put too many more wells in this area. Or remember, we have to do this permit here out of the James and another permit there, but they all speak together. Our permit in the James River is affected by the permit that the Women's Correctional Facility has in the Mechunk Creek. If that permit stops, if they stop drawing from there, our permit increase goes up. But right now, it's a decrement on there because of the amount they're drawing out of the Mechunk Creek, because they're also supplying our water system. So while they inform each other and are connected, they are unique documents and requirements.
And we do have a copy of that plan somewhere.
Oh yes, ma'am.
Because I had it, well, it's quite thick.
Oh yes, ma'am. It's on our website. We have a massive document library. It's on there, but we also have it in the office, of course. And it is a huge document.
Huge document.
I would suggest, and maybe it's already covered in this, that the board is at the four meetings to discuss progress and results. Or if that can't happen, if all five members can't be there, at least two representatives from the
board. Of course. Yeah, we will definitely be inviting you to these meetings. Okay. This is a big project, mm-hmm. and this contractor just happens to be the one doing it. Now, they did the design for us at Zion Crossroads too, and we've gotten reasonable prices from them, but the board will absolutely be involved in this process all along.
That's good.
Yeah, well, there's no question of that. I mean, that was never in doubt or in question. We wouldn't do these kind of big projects without having board involvement.
Okay.
Again, go back to the undesignated fund balance at $3 million. Was there any money put in that within the last, say, 30 days? Because we're in another fiscal year from the school system. Or?
You won't know that until September, October, November timeframe, Mr. Weaver, on what the end of year balances were. Any ballpark, Marianna or Mr. Bell?
If I can give you a ballpark, we will have probably. $1 million in unexpended.
That's what I understood.
Expenditures, and I'm sure we'll have revenues above and beyond what we budget, just because of the real estate tax. When you get that second half bump, when the board increases the tax rate, and
they didn't spend though.
What's that?
Approximately the $1 million, they didn't spend it in that particular
correct.
Budget.
If you think about, for instance.
You're talking about county, though, aren't you?
I'm talking about county.
Yeah, he's talking about county. He's not talking about schools, sir.
No, I'm not talking about schools.
I am talking about schools.
Well, we're not talking about schools yet. That's a separate issue.
Okay.
So, but on county, in every department, there'll be some, you know, in some departments, there would be some money left over or personnel costs or things like that. But also then the revenue changes. On the schools, that's a different issue. And what have we heard from schools?
I haven't
yet. Okay.
No, I've heard about $1 million, but they're going to maybe one. $500,000 for some computers, I think. What was it?
Right, they wanted to upgrade their server infrastructure.
Yeah, it was $250,000.
Yeah.
That was $250,000 they wanted pre-committed to them so they could do the server upgrade, and then they would put it back to the county after the end of the fiscal year with the end-of-year money. I don't think it'll be... I'm not as comfortable with the numbers this year. So.
Well, I'm sure they're going to come back because they cut back on school buses saying that they would probably come back at the end and ask for it, whatever was left over.
Right.
Because they went from four buses, I believe, to two.
That's right.
So I'm sure that they will have, it may be $1 million, Mr. Weaver, I'm sure.
No, I'm just.
Like everybody, they'll be saying we need
to. I'm looking at this undesignated fund balance, and I know that
we don't want to
that you've talked about this in the past. And we don't want to get that down to zero and not have any more revenue going into that.
Yeah, it's getting scary.
Yeah.
Indeed it is. I'm going to pull up, just for the public's interest, I'm going to pull up the unassigned fund balance report on the screen. This is in the package every meeting. And so this is what Mr. Weaver is referring to, is this undesignated fund balance. We provide that report for every, or finance does for every meeting, and that's what's in undesignated. The fund balance is vastly larger than that. You've got $8.3 million set aside in restricted, and then you've got a whole bunch, another several million in obligated or committed projects.
But that's the 12%.
That's 8.3 million is the 12%.
Which is in our regulations. Our
yes, in your policy, county policy.
Which we made up, the board made up.
Right. In addition to that, you've got a certain amount that dollars that are committed for existing projects that you've already approved. Separate from both of those categories is this category, the undesignated fund balance.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions?
No.
Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $235,570 from unassigned fund balance to the CIP project budget for the Atlantic County Water Sewer Master Plan to establish the funds necessary for project agreements 2, 4, and 5.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve project agreement number 2 for the Savannah County Utility Standards Manual update with Dewberry Engineers, Inc. in the amount of $28,670 and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as deformed by the County Attorney.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion 3.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the project agreement number 4 for asset management plan and billing rate and capacity fee analysis with Dewberry Engineers in the amount of $76,600 and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject as to approval to form by the county attorney.
Aye.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the project agreement number 5 of the Water and Wastewater Master Plan with Dewberry Engineers, Inc. in the amount of $130,300 and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as deformed by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, ma'am. Holy cow.
I told you I'm your favorite person today.
I don't know, but you're always one of our favorite people.
Well,
tonight.
But she's expensive.
I'm being quiet. Dewberry Engineers Incorporated.
Yeah.
Project agreement number 3, Ms. Dollar.
Okay, this is for the Waterworks Operation Plan Development. This one is specifically for Zion Crossroads. As part of our requirements from Virginia Department of Health, we are required to obtain a waterworks operation permit and to develop this business operations plan, and that ensures that minimum drinking standards are met. The operations plan will aid the county in implementing standard operating procedures consistent with state and federal regulations. It will require bacteriological sampling plan, a cross-connection control program, lead and copper materials survey and sampling plan, disinfection byproducts monitoring plan, emergency management plan for extended power outages, and financial information. This project agreement is considered operational expense and not construction, which means we are not able to use the debt service to cover this cost. We have to cash fund it. And the total project agreement is $53,250.
Was this planned on in the project?
This is all part of what we knew we were going to have to do. We just can't use the debt service because it's not considered construction.
Well, it's all coming out of the unassigned.
This is fund
balance,
yes.
This is part of the designated to the project.
It's not operations as in we're operating, water's flowing through the system, and we're paying to tighten bolts and right. check valves and all that. It's prepping for an operational system. You have to have this in place to be able to operate your system.
Some expensive paper.
Yep.
Yeah, I had some questions on the clarifications mm-hmm. and exclusions. These are things that are not included. Cost estimates are not included in this proposal. Cost estimates for what?
Cost estimates that'll what the samplings will you know, the bacteriological samplings, what that testing will do, or what it'll cost us. Well, trying to find the right
One, it says the county will be responsible for all cost of proposed sampling and testing.
Mm-hmm.
I would think the $53,000 should include that.
This is just the plan.
Right.
This is just us to, this is just them to give us a book that says this is the plan that you will follow.
So I'll give you an example. This is paying for a manual on how to operate your system and what things you have to check and how many times you have to check it and what you have to check off to make sure you're complying with law. Now when you actually do that stuff, like test it or tighten a bolt or do water quality testing, that's an operational cost. It'll be part mm-hmm. of the day-to-day operations. This plan doesn't pay for future day-to-day operations. It's just designing how you have to do it. You're
right.
Saying, here's your rule book. So, for instance, if you have a manual, if you have a vehicle at home, and you have a manual that says, here's how your vehicle's built and here's how you maintain things, that vehicle doesn't come with a guarantee that they're going to pay for the bolt when you need to go buy a bolt or change your brakes. It's just telling you how to do it.
$53,000 is a lot for a manual.
If we could,
I thought it was going to pay for testing as well.
Yeah,
it's a lot of money for a manual.
It is.
That's a good point.
But there's also a lot involved in them doing this manual. They have to make sure that, you know, best practices as far as the machinery go, best practices as far as the VDH goes. They have to follow the rules and regulations, the laws that are put in place for those health standards. So there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes for them.
In fact, they have to do some of those things too.
Mm-hmm.
But
they already have an operations
right.
manual that says what they have to do by state.
Mm-hmm.
So their operational cost of testing, mm-hmm. buying the test kits, sending the tests in is part of day-to-day operations costs. But they already have an operations manual that tells them what they have to do.
Yeah.
Again, it's just like a parts and maintenance manual for your car that tells you how to do it and what you have to do, but it doesn't say, oh, by the way, we'll pay for the parts when you buy them,
mm-hmm.
or the labor to install the parts. And yes, $53,000 is a lot of money, but it's what it costs.
The cost that you're talking about will eventually be the ones that will be covered by people that are on the system.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
And the emergency management plan for extended power outages,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that it doesn't mention a generator. It talks about how you're going to help people when they have no water for 5 or 6 days, but why wouldn't they have a generator?
We do.
I'm sure there will be a generator there, but after so many days, you know, if it's an emergency, a true emergency, even that generator's going to wear out. Even that generator's not going to be able to keep up. You know, we're talking true emergency situations.
I would think that they'd have a generator that would work.
Not possible.
Not possible?
It's not possible. To operate a public
Several
utility
generators.
System mm-hmm. 24/7, 365 under extremis conditions where you don't have any power, you can't just operate that system on local generators.
Well,
that's why
for
you have
a
local generators
can't.
For a hospital to operate the hospital on emergency power, but it only operates part of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
All the administrative offices don't have power, and you know it only operates it only power certain parts of it. Even that. That's where we have deaths in the world all the time during storms, because even the emergency power goes down because it can't sustain it for a long time. So we won't have a way to make sure that our water and sewer system operate 24/7, 365.
Well, maybe not 24/7, but there should be an emergency plan where your availability of water, this section is 2 hours today, an hour tomorrow, whatever, so that people can at least get some drinking water. I don't know, I'm just saying, if you had that kind of catastrophe, this isn't going to help.
This is not designed to fix the system, maintain the system, work the system. It's designed to tell you how you have to manage your system and test your system to meet compliance with state code and with DEQ regulations.
Yeah, I understand
but
that.
We will certainly have emergency operations plans in place for our systems, just like we do for our county buildings now. But right now, if the power went out, only certain offices in certain parts of our county buildings are emergency power. Most of the rest of them are not emergency power at all. It's only critical systems, because you can't emergency power everything. So I mean, I know it's expensive and I know there's a lot there, but this is the cost of operating a public water and sewer system.
Okay.
I can remember Mr. Stevens saying many times that the price is going to be high, there's going to be things that we have to do. I can't remember the exact things he said, but...
And unfortunately, this is one of them.
Yeah.
This is one of them. VDH will not allow us to turn our system on without having this and the, in hand and having the permits. We have to have this.
Yeah, I'm just shocked.
Yeah. There's a definite sticker shock, but...
For sure.
Well, hopefully these are the only times we go through these stickers projects, because I agree with you. I think we just stickered about $500,000 out for no work. Well, I'm sorry. No physical labor being done here, just sure. Telling us what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
How would that process work with regards to the JRWA pipeline? Is that all going to be handled by LCWA? Similar.
No, everything to do with the pump station, the intake, the pump station, and the first mile of the pipe will be handled specifically by JRWA, and so our county and Louisa County's contributions will cover all of that, including the capital cost that you're already funding. It's 273 or $200,000 a year for our capital cost contribution. But we haven't started paying any operational costs yet, a little bit, like the attorney's costs and some training costs and things like that. But when we start having operators down there, then we'll have to start paying for their salaries. And
I guess what I'm really saying is, I get that this is part of a water system as opposed to operating a pump at a mile, but will we have similar type of permitting / consulting work manuals that we will need for the JRWA that we're currently not budgeting for, and that we should plan and budget for next year?
Yes, and we'll build those into JRWA budget. And whenever the JRWA builds their budget, half of that cost we build in our county budget.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying.
Yes, you'll definitely have these.
Now knowing a little bit more when you anticipate to build those in.
Okay.
I guess I have also a concern about the building of Louisa. I know that we can go through here, but I always had the fear that, if you miss one of these items, you just missed $100,000, and Louisa's sharing half of the cost on that, and I'm sure we double check them all. But how do we proceed in that to make sure that we get the bills out to them?
None of these do. The only thing Louisa owes us right now is that they owe us the $380,000 for half of the capital cost of the core for the E911 system, the radio system.
Okay.
And then they owe us about $60,000 a year or $70,000 a year in operational costs, and so we collect those from the county. Now they haven't paid that yet because I don't think they've. They haven't made their system operational. We don't collect that money from them until their system is operational. But that will come in every year, but that's only and completely and totally tied to the E911 project, not to any of this, sir.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $53,250 from unassigned fund balance to the EXR Water Sewer Fund budget for Waterworks Operations Plan development to establish the funds necessary for Project Agreement 3.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the Project Agreement Number 3 for Waterworks Operations Plan Development with Dewberry Engineers in the amount of $53,250 and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. The one thing I think makes this a little bit less painful is this is one I think we'd already
Yeah, we've been talking about it and planning. It is expensive, and I wish it weren't. But
well,
Mr. Stevens has been prepping you for years.
I'm just happy, and we are
Yes, ma'am.
There's a tail to every big public utilities project, so.
All righty.
Let me apologize. On the appointments, I added two agenda items. I've forgotten. There's a third. On the bottom of your screen, the red item. Her application is in your package, but we forgot to add it onto the items there. So she had asked for appointments to two different things, and her name is listed there for it. So the package is in there, but we just forgot to put it on the agenda. So I wanted to make sure that you saw that.
No, it's in red.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Ms. Kilpatrick had requested assignment to the EdTAC, but also to PARC, replacing a member who is rolling off. But I just forgot to put it on the agenda.
She was here last week when they
it's one position for the EdTAC?
There are two positions empty on the EdTAC.
And if we go to the 13th, we just approve all of them.
Well, you can approve all the ones that are on the screen. Let me go to the package just a second. I'll make this more complicated. So here are the EdTAC members. And so the ones you're considering tonight first are these. There are five at-large members. Mr. Sorrell's requesting reappointment. Mr. Sagarin's requesting reappointment. And Ms. Kilpatrick is requesting appointment. And you have three vacancies you could fill, so she could go in any one of those. But we're just pointing out that she's also Fork Union, too. That's why the charter changed to preferably from district, because you want to take good citizens wherever they are. I think you'll find that between all these representatives, you're going to get a pretty good run from all around the county. So it doesn't have to be just on those five members. So
that one in the middle looked a little shit.
When's a chamber rep? Why is a chamber rep thing?
That's being appointed tonight.
Oh,
I'm sorry. No, it's not. Kathleen or Ruth Ann Carr is going from business rep. I don't know, sir.
Yeah, Ruth Ann.
She's going from a business rep, though, not as a chamber rep.
All right.
We done? Yeah, come on, talk about this. Get me out of trouble here.
Yeah, so the Board of Supervisors only appoint the seven members. Okay. So the five from the five at large, preferably from each district, and then the two business reps. The chamber, the EDA, and the Historical Society will appoint their own just directly to. The chamber, at their last board meeting, appointed Pam Dempsey as their representative. The EDA will, Mr. Putnam became the chairman of the EDA, so he'll be stepping off of that, and their next meeting will be August, then they'll have to appoint someone for that too.
So yeah, at the time this was published, I didn't know that Ms. Dempsey had been selected as their rep, but you don't appoint those anyway. So you can appoint all three of those folks to at-large positions to the EdTAC.
Still have room for two more.
Right. And when we get candidates, we'll have those on the agenda. So when you get to the motion, I would urge you to read I move the Board of Supervisors to appoint, and then the name of the council, the person's name, and the term, and then just go down line by line.
Any other questions?
Okay. Help me out with this.
Yes, ma'am. I move.
I move the Board of Supervisors appoint
Economic
Development and Tourism Business Representative Ruth Ann Carr, EdTech at Large Andy Sorrell, EdTech at Large David Sagarin, and EdTech at Large Kathleen Kilpatrick.
Library Board of Trustees.
Oh, okay. Okay, and the Library Board of Trustees, Lisa Gooch.
And
Palmyra Area Revitalization Committee, Kathleen Kilpatrick.
And these will be the dates as presented by the staff, and we'll put those in the motion.
Beginning terms, which is like July 1st, 19.
Yes, sir.
Do you want me to say that?
All the terms begin July 1st, 2019, and we'll put the ending terms in the minutes and in the action report as presented.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Presentations. Come on. Community Investment Collaborative Fund update. Mr. Brothamel, you are a rock star tonight.
I actually won't be presenting this one, but from the Community Investment Collaborative, we have Shannon and Steven. They'll be presenting an update on the loan that you provided back in 2012 and what that's doing for our Fluvanna businesses.
Good afternoon. My name is Steven Davis. I'm the president of the Community Investment Collaborative, or CIC. We'll save ourselves some syllables for the rest of the presentation. It's my colleague Shannon Beach, who, along with being a Fluvanna resident, is our director of programs at CIC. Back in 2012, Fluvanna County led the way in establishing a microloan fund that CIC now operates. We're a nonprofit based in Charlottesville that serves the entire region. Our mission is helping under-resourced entrepreneurs start and grow small businesses. And so the way our program works, we run a 16-week entrepreneur workshop. We offer mentor programs and technical assistance, offer microloans of up to $35,000 and lots of networking opportunities and so forth to help businesses grow. Over the last 7 years, we've worked with a number of Fluvanna residents and businesses to help them through our education programs and mentoring programs. And Fluvanna County in 2012 set up this microloan fund that we administered. We have done that. This is the one part of our loan fund, I will say, as I submitted in the written report that you received. It's been underutilized. We have not been able to do as many loans as we would have liked in that time frame. We would love to do more, and we're still continuing to do so. We've done approximately, I believe it was in the report, about $19,000 in loans from the fund. We have another application that's pending under review that will probably be a couple of months before we get to a final determination one. So that's a little bit about our program. We've had a lot of success throughout the region, and we have served a lot of Fluvanna residents and businesses through the program over the years, and look to continue to do so as we've built relationships throughout the county, including with the Chamber and a number of other partners throughout the region. So that's just a quick update. Our full update was submitted in writing. I'd be happy to take your questions or answer any specifics that you might have about what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Are you working primarily with just startups or with established?
About half and half, really. The folks who go further in our program are folks who have actually operated a little bit. You know, so they've sold at a farmer's market for a few weeks, or they've been operating part-time and are trying to think about how to go full-time. So they come into our program with a little bit more context, but we serve both. And I'd say it's probably slightly more is a new idea, you know, they're not operating, and a little under half is they're have been operating at some level, including several that we've served that have been full-time for, you know, for several years or more.
How does the criteria differentiate between those sort of different classifications?
The criteria for just a loan fund? So for the loan fund, there's two ways to qualify for our loan fund. You can either be a graduate of our workshop, or you can have been in business for at least 6 months and when you walk in the door. And so you can apply for a loan fund under either of those. Obviously, we have far less heartburn the more history we see with any business, you know, proven history, proven sales, and you're actually getting into operation challenges that help you grow, as opposed to a really good plan to try to make it work. And so out of the 60 loans that CIC has done, you know, over the time period, which most of those are not Fluvanna, but of those 60 loans, I believe 12 or 14 of them were to brand new startup businesses. They were not operating before the loan, and the remainder were to existing businesses, some of which were only operating for 2 or 3 months, you know, when they applied for the loan, but they were at least had showed proof of concept and were actually selling.
Do you have classes here in Fluvanna? I know you're having that.
In 2015, we ran a program at Zion Crossroads, kind of specifically targeting Fluvanna and Louisa counties. And we ran the class twice. We were not able to sustain it beyond then because we just most of the applications we were getting were not necessarily Fluvanna or Louisa. And so we just felt like it was not a sustainable on its own. As a result of that program, we had more residents from Fluvanna and Louisa who have been able to participate in our Charlottesville programs. And when we surveyed most of those folks, many of them work in Charlottesville or in Albemarle anyway, and so they're already there, so it was not a barrier to their participation.
So one specific reason I wanted CIC to present to you tonight is because back in 2012, when the board gave funds to CIC as a new organization, they put the board approved $45,000 there as microloans on a kind of a revolving fund, where they do loans, you can see on the screen, where they put loans out to people, and then folks pay them back in most cases. And then the fund is revolving because of that. The approval that they expressly identified that night when you approved it in December 2012 was the donations for the express purpose of providing education and capital to Flavanna small businesses, business entrepreneurs who have difficulty accessing funding from traditional sources. That's one. Two, seek an additional support system that is relevant to their business needs. That one. And then the one that we need to take a look at is and are accepted into the Community Investment Collaborative. So if you collaborative program. So CIC right now, because there weren't enough entrepreneurs that needed money that were invested in the program, other businesses have come forward from Flavanna County asking CIC for assistance. It's for microloans for small businesses in Flavanna County, but they didn't necessarily take the class. So if the board is, and Stephen can explain that, but if the board is interested in allowing that to occur, then we'll just reissue a new letter to codify that, to say that the funds can be used for Flavanna businesses who need funds, microloan funding sources, who may take your classes, etc. But we need to clarify, because that's not what was approved in 2012. I don't see it as a big problem, but it needs to be clarified and codified. And so, Stephen, if you can explain how you use the money now.
Yeah, and so currently the requirement is that they be graduates of our workshop, have gone through the 16-week program. We've had two applications over the years from folks who are not graduates who still had trouble accessing a traditional bank credit. One, a long-standing business that had grown recently and showed a loss on a previous year's tax return, and for that reason, several banks weren't able to get to a yes on a small loan. And so we were able to help them, and if you can approve this change, this would be able to do more like that for Flavanna businesses. And the other one was another case of a growth issue that we ultimately weren't able to approve, but that was still a case of someone who hadn't been through our workshop and would not have been eligible according to the original agreement.
And as you'll recall, at the same time you did the $45,000 that same night, you approved $35,000 for the EDA for similar microloan purposes for Flavanna businesses, but none of that funding ever got used for microloans. And so this is probably a better source for that, a more knowledgeable source for that, to be able to fund those types of things. And you've reassigned those dollars to another function, so we would just need your concurrence.
And so over the years, we've gotten a lot better at making the loans. We've done a lot more, just not having been in Flavanna. We would love to continue to build that pipeline and find existing businesses that have trouble accessing credit, whether for personal financial reasons, kind of time in business growth, or whatever that may be, underwriting criteria that banks have. And if we can help them get there, we would love to do so.
And those initial startups are so difficult because usually they're working another job, mm-hmm. then they're working that initial startup job. Mm-hmm. So going for 16 weeks to a class, mm-hmm. time that they don't have.
There's certainly a piece to that, and that's part of one of the reasons that we do help folks and are helping more and more folks who don't need our workshop but still need access to capital.
Could use the help.
Correct.
So if I get three nods from the board, we'll get it on a future agenda just for approval, and then we'll get it.
I've seen three nods already, so good. Let's go ahead and get that done.
We'll put it on for August.
So, Shannon, anything to add?
Sure. Just want to address the educational piece. We do have a financial management program now because we offer our loans up to more folks who haven't taken the workshop. We have a component where we can offer bookkeeping. We can offer accounting assistance where they come in monthly and we look at their numbers. So I will say, even if they haven't taken our workshop, they still have access to our mentoring program and the financial management program as well.
So.
We'd love to help in any way we can to kind of meet your economic development goals. So please, you know, continue to reach out and let us know if there are folks you think you can benefit from our services.
And where can you find, paper about you have flyers have banks off the computer.
Yeah. We can.
We need more of those in the community.
We will get those more out to you through your economic development offices and the chamber to get those to you.
Wearing that. He needs a good workout.
All right. Understood.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time and your support.
We do appreciate it. And affordable senior housing project, DHCD grant, Mr. Ball.
So I'm just going to do a quick introduction. So the county's been working on an affordable senior housing project and grant for a while now. I want to say for
how many years?
Three, about 3 years now. So this is kind of, what's that? Yes, this is. So this is kind of the wrap up to this. One of the requirements of the grant is to kind of present the findings and kind of present what this grant led into. So I'm going to introduce Beth Keenan. And she's going to go through the project and just kind of describe where the project left off.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I believe I was here about 2 years ago where we provided what we had learned from the market study. And from that market study, we moved on to look at recommendations that came out of it as next steps. That first step was an option to purchase or partner with the Village Oaks site. The second step was an analysis of the market study for recommended design. The market study at that time provided some design parameters that we looked at to see if how viable they were within the 3.5-acre site. So we did that as well, and then we developed a more defined financial picture of the proposed project, meeting DHCD's requirements for a PAR and a PER, preliminary architecture and preliminary engineering. As just a reminder again of who the team was. This project management team was formed in May or June of 2016. It predates me, and it involved a number of representatives from the community and various area partners, as well as DHCD, who provided the planning grant that we've worked under for the last several years. The site, again, is a refresher at Village Oaks, is about 3.5 acres. It's currently owned by Southern Development. It is still owned by Southern Development. It's across from the Ashlawn Gate and the main entrance into Lake Monticello, and it is part of the Village Oaks PUD. It's a little bit of an odd shape, which creates some engineering challenges and obstacles. This was what the recommendation out of the market study was. It was a 50-unit cottage style targeting 41 bedroom and 10 two-bedroom. The square footages were approximate. The area median incomes that applied to that unit mix were 40%, 50%, and 60% AMI. Fluvanna County is in the Charlottesville MSA, and currently the median income for a family of four is $89,600. This gave just some more unit features and ideas of what should be included and what was needed. So where did we leave off after we left here in September of 2017? We developed a preliminary architecture report. We worked with Southern Development to gain more information on the property and its characteristics, its current zoning. We also did a draft VHDA tax credit application to evaluate how it would score. 9% is a more competitive round. It's scored below 9%. It would be more like a bond deal. It had about a score of a 411. 425 is the more competitive round, so it's missing some of the characteristics, but still within a range. And out of that, we developed a plan with the project management team, who are represented here today with DBF Architecture and Draper Aiden, to create this vision, which was a two-phased project. Phase one was 60 units. Phase two was an expansion of 10 units. Here are some images of just the various floors. It was three stories with the addition, phase two, added into the back as an option, looking at memory care and the incredible need for affordable housing in Fluvanna County. Here are some of the floor plans that were developed. This is quite schematic and very early on. What we noticed with this site is that the cottage design that was recommended in the market study was very difficult to achieve within that site. It just did not work out space-wise. So this option became a more viable approach. In the second quarter of 2018, we met with DHCD to review next steps because it doesn't fit nicely into a box, the recommended site does. And we looked at sources of funds and initial pricing and what that would look like as a total project cost. And then in the third and fourth quarter, we worked with Fluvanna County Procurement, and I want to give a lot of credit to them for helping us to get a engineer on board. Their standards that they have are really very, very high and well-regarded, so it was a really great experience to get that done. And then this first quarter of 2019, we had another DHCD-facilitated meeting as part of our grant and program management program that we have for the grant. They provided update and guidance on our next steps. We had a community meeting to gather input at the Fork Union Communities building, and then we developed with Draper Aiden, who was procured through Fluvanna County, a preliminary engineering report and site cost data. And then we are here today with you on the second day of the third quarter. We, with the schematic level, and these numbers have been adjusted a little bit since this was submitted yesterday, but gives a total cost of about $18 million. And when that number is broken down, you can look at CDBG funding for possible site work support. You can look at Federal Home Loan Bank. These are, again, very schematic numbers because we're trying to make a lot of assumptions off of very early design. Federal Home Loan Bank would be another potential source. County support is another option. Tax credit equity and low interest loan and other potential sources for funds. So this was just a very quick estimate. And then as we look to closing out the grant, which we have asked for an extension through the end of August to get our paperwork all done and to finalize it, we wanted to look and see what the project management team's capacity is for moving forward, what other options or sites might be something to consider, because Fluvanna County does have an incredible need for both affordable housing and senior housing. So we also indicated, are there other potential sites for consideration that meet the same goal and provide affordable housing, because that's going to continue to be a growing need. And that's all I had.
Why the two phases? If you're talking about, well, 60, why hold up on the other 10?
So the market study indicates you could go to 70. You have a wide range because you have such a need. When we were working with the project management team, there were new faces added to it, and one brought in the need for, as your residents are aging, that memory care and more assisted care could be needed as well. So we added that as a phase two.
Would the cost of doing that as a phase two,
it was over
doing it in the first phase?
Yes, it would. It would be another $1 million. It was just added on as a next thought.
Yeah, because your current cost per unit is around $35,000-$40,000. If you do have those 10, then you're close to $100,000 per unit. So significantly different. Would you see what you should just do?
Yes, I think it was an issue of timing, and when we thought about that and the suggestions that came up. So.
And so. As far as a target rate for affordable housing, did you list that?
The market study looks at, and remember, the market study came out in June of 2017, and it looked at 40% AMI, 50, and 60%. And quickly, I don't have my AMI chart with me to break it down by individuals in the household, but at 40% for a family of four, you're at $35,840. 50%, you're at $44,800. And 60% is $53,760. So those are your area median incomes at those particular income levels.
Separate affordable housing from senior housing, because typically affordable housing you might see families of four, senior housing typically wouldn't see that, right?
Yeah.
How does the AMI change from your perspective?
The area median income, I mean, I can look at the chart and pull that out, but it would break it down by person, but that's generally $89,600 is where we start, and then we can break it down. I apologize, bring my chart that breaks it down by each one-person household, two-person, three-person, four-person, my mistake.
And then last question is, this facility doesn't have any sort of shared component or...
It has some community space within it.
It does, okay.
It does have some community space within it.
I didn't see that in the quick design grant as well.
Yeah, it's a little schematic. Yeah. But yes, it was a feature of it.
And is that site, you said it's kind of limited, I mean, if you had your preferences, would you pick other sites? Or
I think there would be other sites to consider. I and correct me if I'm wrong, when this started, they looked at four sites, and originally it was the two schools that were considered, and through the market study approach, it identified this of those four sites to be the most viable.
And Village Oaks is already
zoned
as a PUD area,
mm-hmm.
so that makes that easy.
Yeah, it's difficult to find something that's close to transportation routes, grocery stores, medical offices, things like that, by moving it out. There's certainly much cheaper places to put it in our county, including the two schools. We looked at Columbia and Cunningham schools, but because there's almost nothing from services in those remote locations, it would be difficult to put senior independent living housing in that area. So the consolidated, the other place was right down here across from E.W. Thomas. That site was looked at as well. But the only site that seemed viable at the time through the study group was the one at Village Oaks. There clearly could be others, and along the Zion Crossroads corridor in the future too, mm-hmm. because you'll have transportation routes there and you'll have additional commercial development. But this is really I don't want to state this the wrong way. It's kind of a wish and a hope and a dream. We've done a study. We've figured out that, yes, we really do need senior independent living mm-hmm. Facilities, and yes, we do need a way to keep people in our county and not in their homes that are, you know, older and you know, they don't have handicap accessibility and things, and we want to keep people near their support systems. But this is also not something that Fluvanna County was planning on taking on and building and managing, you know, housing and things like that. So it really is an idea and a concept as a preliminary roadmap for a developer that may want to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Southern may not want to develop this at all. Someone else may want to.
A lot of work went into this plan.
Absolutely.
I know we have one committee member sitting back there, and a lot of people on it were people who had knowledge of senior housing and how to do it. I'm kind of disappointed because it seemed like it stopped, you know, and it slowed down to a point where I know I kind of lost the enthusiasm mm-hmm. because I knew it was a need and it was well planned and we changed it and we talked a lot and the engineer did all kind of drawing and it was a really exciting time and I had no doubt that eventually mm-hmm. we would have that happen.
Mm-hmm. I think there's still...
So do we still have some hope?
I think there's still some hope. I think there's hope.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate your tremendous effort. I think there is hope. It is a large project for...
Just remember that this is it was a $30,000 grant, so it was a very limited scope to begin with. And to go forward with it now requires someone to decide they want to build this mm-hmm. and to go after funding sources or things mm-hmm. like that. If the county is not interested in being a housing manager, then we kind of shop this out to other developers and things like that and say, hey, you know, is anybody interested? We've got some plans, some prelims have been done. But it unfortunately mm-hmm. kind of sits on the shelf now.
Yeah.
And we know the need. We've already done a study. We've used the grant well. The folks that are on the team really did a fantastic job. The design that was done is amazing. Mm-hmm. But it is a preliminary package to hand to an interested developer. Yeah,
and
the other Charlottesville Land Trust. Yeah, I can't remember the whole acronym, but Charlottesville Land Trust also has a reservation on a piece of property at Nahar Village, the open area there that they may or may not do something with in the future for something similar to this. Mm-hmm. We probably don't need two of them being worked on, designed, and built at the same time, but this kind of thing could transfer over mm-hmm. to that area too. As long as it's near services and support and is reasonably affordable, it would be a benefit to our county.
Now, with her presentation, can you give that in a hard copy to us?
Yes, ma'am, sure.
Send it to us on an email?
Yeah.
I want to make sure I got this right. It was $18,916,000.
And those are very schematic numbers. Those are not numbers to be held fast to. It's a schematic level design. We had a local contractor price it. Draper Aiden, the engineering firm, did some site work pricing. So that's where it fell.
And that was for 50 units?
That was for the 60.
60 units.
And again, I emphasize that was very preliminary numbers. It's hard to estimate, and construction prices are always going up. So just want to make sure that's made clear. We are happy to continue to partner and help in any way that we can. And
And that's really kind of the crux of the discussion tonight, is what's next? The grant is done.
That second phase was added on because we had some committee members who were really interested in having a health component to that building. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have elderly people there, you need to have a nurse on staff, or, you know, we don't have that continuum from independent assisted living, mm-hmm. nursing home, memory care. And they were trying to put in something
to realize it, but to also understand that by moving into a more assisted living healthcare facility, you kind of change the dynamics and the guidelines a great deal.
Right.
So that was part of how phase two was added in as a potential, but it does change a lot of the requirements associated with it.
So I don't know that there's any more that we can't do any more out of the grant. Mm-hmm. Capability, the dollars that were associated with that. So what does the board want us to do with regard to senior housing or affordable housing in our community? You've got a potential development at Colonial Circle that you approved recently. If that goes forward, that would be a good thing. You've got a potential development being looked at Nahar Village. You've got this potential set of plans that someone could pick up. And I'm sure there'll be things along the Zion Crossroads Corridor in the future. But if, unless there's some direction, this is going to be truly just mm-hmm. packaged up and sit there, and then we will, as we talk to developers, we will shop this all the time. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rothmel will use this in his bag of tricks to mm-hmm. talk to folks, but there's no active component to it anymore.
I seem to recall a group that came in and made a presentation. They were kind of specializing in, you know, funding / building these kinds of things, where they were looking for affordable housing, or they were getting affordable housing dollars.
That was Piedmont Housing Alliance, and that was Beth's organization when they were originally talking about the two schools.
I thought there was somebody else that was kind of like from North Carolina or something weird like that.
Not that I recall. Her Sunshine Mathon, who's the executive director of Piedmont Housing Alliance, his predecessor, Frank
Grosch,
was the one. He and I and some other staff members who worked on that with relationship to these two schools. But I don't recall any other.
Was there someone that came in December?
Since I've been here, anyway.
Can we have a full man on your board?
Leontony Peck in my office. She took my spot on there, I think, when I rolled off PHA.
Mm-hmm. So. We're happy to continue to help facilitate it and work with whomever and be of any support that we can. But Steve said,
and we'll tug and pull with PHA at any time when there's any ever discussion about affordable housing, because they're our go-to partner for that. And the problem is this process is kind of exhausted now. It did what it was supposed to do.
And the good thing is we have something that mm-hmm. is developed and has some planning and some projects. So it's not a wash.
Quality
work and good, worthwhile work.
Yeah. We have a market study. Yes. We have some preliminary architecture that was mm-hmm. put in a lot of time by a lot of that management team, and we have a preliminary engineering
report. And you have to have all that stuff if you're going to apply for any kind of grant funding or federal funding or anything anyway. So
it is useful. Well,
not kind of correlated, but separate and interesting because of this article that's from the Central Virginia, the last paragraph, or that last line, I found interesting. He cited Stonegate, the apartment complex down in Florida, which he said had a mere 10 public school students in 156 units. Hmm. And if you recall, presentation was being made by Ship Engineering. They said that the ratio in apartments happened to be particularly small, 0.3. So I found that interesting.
Especially in a rural county. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's always that push and pull between the definition of, quote, affordable housing / senior housing. Mm-hmm. Kind of couches that, but a lot of seniors need affordable housing, of course, mm-hmm. and the concerns in the community about what that actually means. So I did find that.
What was the 83,000?
The 89,600 is the AMI for a family of four in the Charlottesville metropolitan area.
Their immediate income for a family of four.
So where does Blue Banners?
It's, you're...
That we're in the...
You're part of the Charlottesville...
Same statistical area.
We're on the high side.
Yeah. We were in the 60s.
No, we're higher. Ours is in the 70s, and the statistical average that you use for metropolitan statistical area that we're included in, that's a broader number that includes not just us. But our number's not terribly far off from that.
Yeah, upper 70s.
And wealthy retirees, or well-to-do retirees.
Said to be Mr. Nichols.
Why about them people moving out of going to Alabama?
I only have a wake up left. So
there goes our median income.
I'm not even a one digit midget. I'm a next. So.
Anyway. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beth. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll now move forward to the consent agenda. J, minutes of June 19, 2019. Ms. Solis. K, CRMF PW20-00-001 skid steer repair. Mr. Kreitzer. L, Historical Society Farm Heritage Museum funding, Mr. Twisdale. M, FY19A to localities funding, Fire Department, Mr. Twisdale. N, FY19 for Life Supplemental Appropriation, Mr. Twisdale. O, FY19 Sheriff Department Insurance Claim, 2014 Dodge Charger, VIN number 9289, Mr. Kiper. Is there anything more to be pulling? Holy cow, you
don't have to be on here.
I know.
Mr. Nichols, for your last session, there is nothing more important than the
consent. All right.
Really? No bills in here.
No bills, exactly. So except for things that happen.
So you're not pulling my pay raise that's on there?
Well, we looked at it.
I'm going to leave that one alone. All right.
Change your record.
Yes, I know. No, I don't really.
Do we have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda, J to O.
Do we have a second? Motion made by Mr. Weaver, second by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Is there any unfinished business?
I have just a couple quick things. In front of you, Mr. O'Brien just cited one of those, that Zion Crossroads housing plan stalled. I just wanted you to have a copy of that. I had told you before that Louisa County had three different subdivisions that people were coming forward with requests for 1,300 additional units, and they were all kind of put on hold because of water concerns and things. And then secondly, there's a sheet there that shows you that the regional business park in Louisa County at Shannon Hills got a $600,000 grant from Go Virginia, and so that's really helpful because that helps develop that project. They've already acquired the 700 or so acres, and they've already rezoned it, but now this will help on the further development of that potential project. And then lastly, Mr. O'Brien had asked about the new proffer language that came out in state law changes. This package that says proffers up on top, the first page and the back of it is the article out of the newspaper, just to give you some context. And then the back several pages is Mr. Payne's review and discussion of proffer language and the changes in proffer language and what that means for you. So please take the time to read that. It is informative. It's pretty easy to follow, and I think you'll appreciate that. And then if you have questions on it in a subsequent meeting, Mr. Payne can address those. But those are provided for your information.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
We'll now move forward to any new business.
I've been hearing a lot that university juniors and school systems, et cetera, would have gone for $50 an hour. Are we going to be in a poll? Are we going to consider that?
To do what, ma'am?
Increasing to $15 an hour.
Oh, wages?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, remember, you just went to $14 an hour for all your full-time benefit eligible employees. So you just went to 14, and 15 is important, but that's also for urban areas and city areas where the cost of living is substantially different than here. So I think you all getting to $14 an hour is an incredible accomplishment, and that's really great for a rural county where our cost of living is much less than if we lived, and our cost of housing is much less than if we lived in Charlottesville City or some other metropolitan area. So I think you're, frankly, already surpassed the $15 an hour if you compare what it costs to live here versus Charlottesville or Richmond or D.C. or whatever. That's pretty good for starting.
Benefit package as well.
Yeah, right, with benefits on top of it. So, but you know, during the budget season, the board can continue to look at that and we'll certainly look at it.
Out of whack there, like when bus drivers drive field trips, they're still stuck at $10 an hour. Now, the minimum for a bus driver to drive on an hourly rate to drive students is like $15.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
we don't deal with that.
Unfortunately, you and I have no ability to affect that. So, but at least on your county employees, all full-time benefit employees, this works great. And even your part-time, you took all the part-time non-benefit folks where they may only work, you know, 4 hours a week at doing some sports things for Parks and Rec. Those are at a minimum of $12 an hour now.
So. All right.
Real quickly, back on to the proper planning guides. I say staff affected. Wouldn't that be something that we want the Planning Commission to sort of take on and start to develop some guidance as far as how the county would work with a proper policy?
It really doesn't have anything to do with it, with a proper policy in terms of money. This deals with the mechanics of how you do a profit. And there's some added flexibility built into it, and then there's some added let's say controls. So it really, if you're talking about we're going to require $10,000 per unit for a residential development, it doesn't have anything to do with that.
So how do we develop some guidance as far as that goes?
How do we develop some guidance?
I mean, like, wherein does the messaging about how Fluvanna County will work with new developers and what their expectations might be, where does that sort of get developed? I mean, I think in the past, in counties like Altamaha and so on, it was sort of a understood figure that people were coming up with. I may be wrong.
I think those dollar figures are going away because it's pretty clear that the statute doesn't permit it. Okay. I have always been very concerned about the prospect of having them adopted because I think they're unenforceable.
An individual discussion with a developer through the planning process and then through the Board of Supervisors review process, I think is much more appropriate in tying it to impacts on that specific project rather than saying, you know, every new house is $4,000.
Well, and that's fair enough. I'm just saying, do we even have a guidance for impact studies when we do the planning, as an example?
Not now.
Well, right. To give you an idea of what this statute does, under the old statute, the staff really couldn't discuss proffers unless the developer brought them up. So if the developer comes in and says, I want to put 50 residential units here, and the staff is saying, well, it's going to cost X dollars in school costs and things like that, and the roads are going to be impacted in such a way. Now it's easier to say, well, you know, I think the Board of Supervisors might be more inclined to be favorable to this if they knew this road was going to get fixed, something like that. The old statute was very strict about its wording of that.
Mm-hmm. And so in part, I guess the question is, you know, how does the planning department, you know, pass that messaging on, if you would? You know, because we haven't done it in the past. So how, you know, what's going to make them change to have those discussions?
Well, the developer will know what can and can't be discussed.
I understand that. What I'm saying is that, you know, in other words, if the discussion around, let's take the one in Colonial Circle that we just approved, right, as an example. You know, they kind of addressed proffers to some degree in saying that they thought they were going to be a positive tax impact overall, and so therefore there wasn't going to be a cost at the school system. So that was one example that they gave.
And they gave land access.
And they gave land access previously, right? So there were definitely some benefits to the county across the board from that, but that was a pretty, by Fluvanna County's standards, a pretty large development that went through with almost nothing being asked of the developer. from that standpoint. So my question is, where do we as a county, you know, develop the messaging around what we think is the impact, you know, so that we, you know, aren't just looking to the developer to tell us what they want to give us, but we're getting a little bit better sense as to what we think are the real, and let me just finish, I know you think that that's the case, but what I'm saying is, if we don't do an impact study as part of the planning process, then where does that number come from?
Well, you're focusing, if I may say so, too much on these monetary contributions. Mm-hmm. Take one example that comes to my mind immediately is, let's say you had a piece of property that's zoned A1, but has historically been used for industrial purposes. You may recognize my hypothetical. The developer wants to come in and rezone it to industrial, but there are concerns about neighboring properties that would be adversely affected by that. The staff could come in and say, one of our concerns here is the potential effect of these industrial uses on the nearby property. And you may want to think about whether you want to make any proffers to deal with that. You can do that under this statute. You couldn't do it under the other statute.
So maybe Mr. Miles can come, because Mr. Miles came from Prince George County and has got 26 or 27 years of experience in planning, and he can add his comments too.
Yes, so generally, Mr. O'Brien, what we're back in the world now of the proffers that we can fully discuss things with for residential developments. We've always been able to do commercial industrial for the most part, mixed use, but residential developments. A lot of times, in my experience most recently in Prince George County with our county attorney, we were allowed to work if your capital CIP program said that your high school, not in your case, your high school's rather new, ours was old, the high school needed a $100,000 roof replacement. And for instance, and it's identified in the CIP process, within 2 years that developer can actually identify that and address a portion of that. And then once it's paid through the construction building permit process, they have to do that within 2 years. So now we have more flexibility to, a lot of times developers and their land use attorneys, they want to know, if I pay $100,000 towards something, I'm going to see a direct benefit in that district, in that, for that school system,
sure,
for that. And in the past, what got a lot of the home builders and developers upset is that money would end up in different areas. Something was paid. So now we're kind of, with Mr. Payne's summary and everything, we're now back to what a lot of us feel in the development community is a good positive approach. It allows you all as board members to accept money towards those projects, as long as everything is identified in the CIP process. A lot of times developers and attorneys are more than glad to do it.
So I think that Mr. Dahl can ask planning to look at the kinds of things that could be impacted by a new development. And let's make a list of those, so those can be discussion points when planning commission votes, and you all can have
to
them.
To me, so. Right now, the first thing you can ask about is the burn building. If somebody wanted to make some
connection,
because that's going to benefit everybody in the entire county.
But there has to be a pretty direct nexus.
Yeah.
The people that are going to be coming there to fight the fire, doesn't matter where you are in this county.
I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on these details, but the other side of this statute, though, is there are some punitive measures if the county does violate it.
Right. Right. Which is, I guess, part of why I think what I'm expressing is the fact that I think we're relative neophytes, in part because of your guidance, because you felt that it was illegal, which proved to be the case, and now that that's been clarified, you know, now we have the ability to do that, and so, you know, as a group, whether that's planning department, planning commission, and board of supervisors and senior staff, that we have a general sense as to how we proceed with this so that we're not violating it. So that's why I'm bringing it up in terms of
I think it's reasonable to put together the kinds of impacts and the kinds of potential opportunities for discussion, and we'll vet that course through Mr. Payne. But
we're coming up on 6 o'clock, so thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
All righty. I will now open up the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to speak to the board, come to the microphone, state your name and address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic, and direct it to the board. Anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Seeing no one, I will now close the second round of public comments. Mr. O'Brien.
Morris Room.
Mr. Chair, I move the Marin County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed session meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2.3711A1 of the Code of Virginia 1950. Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7 of the Code of Virginia 1950. As amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, real estate, prospective industry, investment of funds, and litigation.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Atlanta County Board of Supervisors. I move the closed meeting be adjourned until the Atlanta County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge. One only public business matter lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion. That is, closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay, motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Mr. Williams?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. I will now bring us back into order for the 7 o'clock public hearing session. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Back over. All right. Mr. Dahl, you've assumed his position.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have Mr. Nichols come up front here. If the board could come up, we've got a couple plaques and a couple certificates to give to Mr. Nichols here.
You want to read that one?
I'll read that one if you would read that one after.
Listen, there ain't a lot of pictures on this.
That was a little short.
You shouldn't talk about this book.
All right, so Mr. Nichols, it's a pleasure of mine to finally read one of these for you after you read it over.
Wait a second, because you're trying to get rid of
me? No.
Yes.
You've read it for so many employees, so I'm honored to be able to read this for you. So, Fluvanna County, Virginia, the Board of Supervisors takes pleasure in presenting a certificate of commendation to Stephen M. Nichols for service as set forth in the following citation. For exceptional service, exemplary leadership, and an unwavering commitment to excellence while serving as county administrator from 2012 to 2019. Mr. Nichols brought extensive skills and knowledge honed during 36 years serving in the United States Navy and while serving as practice administrator with Cardiovascular Associates of Charlottesville. He implemented numerous change initiatives to improve service, efficiency, and effectiveness between citizens, the Board of Supervisors, and the county staff. His initiatives led to many organizational and personnel improvements, reorganization of staff departments to address accountability and public service needs, better lines of communication between departments, constitutional offices, agencies, creation of career ladder and promotion opportunities for staff, the implementation of formal employee appreciation and recognition program, and the establishment of a formal learn and earn program. He continually reminded staff to be better tomorrow than we were today. Major strides were made in communications with citizens during his tenure, including the expansion of social media usage, frequent interviews with the media on topics of interest,
a redesigned county website, and the creation of fan mail to push timely Fluvanna area news. He always found ways to engage with citizens and build closer relationships within the community. Mr. Nichols is mission-oriented and results-driven, and that is evident when you take a look around the county. He has worked tirelessly on the Zions Crossroad Water and Sewer Project, James River Water Project, E911 Public Radio System, Columbia Area Renewer Effort, CARE, and efforts to expand broadband internet service, all of which will benefit our citizens for years to come. Enhancing the county's economic development and tourism initiatives was equally important to him. He created the Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council, EDTAC, held frequent meetings with business concerns, considering the establishment or expansion of business in Fluvanna, and implemented the Spotlight on Business in the County Administrator's Report. He supported local business efforts by holding the Celebrate Fluvanna Business event and commercial realtors and property managers breakfast. His list of significant accomplishments is a reflection of the breadth and depth of his positive impact on citizens, staff, and county operations. Mr. Nichols has truly made Fluvanna County a great place to live, learn, work, and play. Presented the second day of July, 2019, John M. Sheridan, Chair of Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors.
I'm certainly glad he read that one. And we've got one more for you. The Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors and the staff of Fluvanna County, with gratitude and deepest appreciation. Stephen M. Nichols, County Administrator, April 23, 2012 through July 5, 2019. Exemplary leadership and unwavering dedication. Best wishes for a happy and active retirement, Fluvanna County, Virginia. And I'd like to add to that, your leadership, being someone that I've always appreciated this, leaders that lead by example. They don't sit there and tell you what they want you to do. They get out front and they do it. And your love for our county and for the betterment of our people is something that's always shown through. Thank you very much. Yes,
ma'am. I have three ladies.
Brenda deserves a lot of credit for sharing.
She had to spend a lot less time with me than you all did.
Because it didn't matter what meeting you went to, he was going to show up sooner or later.
So I've been so blessed to have this incredible opportunity, and I've said in other things, there's lots of folks to credit this to, certainly my wife and my family. But I just want to tell you all, thank you so much for the blessing and the opportunity to serve. I said the other day that when you are in the military, you get to serve, and you get to serve your nation and your shipmates and things. But here, I get to serve my neighbors. And when you get to work in a place where you're taking care of the people that live next door to you, and working with the people that work next door to you, that's an amazing blessing. And not very many people get that, and I'm thankful for it. And I appreciate the board's support over the years. This is an incredibly positive board. Boards are not always like that, but you all, five of you, have been so good at providing support to the staff, direction to the staff, and being collaborative and collegial, even when you disagree on tough issues. And I really, that makes a huge difference to all of us when you're that way, and we appreciate it a lot. So thank you for this opportunity. It has been amazing.
I just got some new golf balls today too.
That's okay, I can do it to everyone. All right. Now, public hearings.
We have none. Action matters. Potential amendment to zoning ordinance regarding temporary signs. Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, this item arises from a letter that was delivered to the county administrator at the end of last week. And the subject matter is temporary signs under the zoning ordinance, particularly, but not exclusively, the temporary political signs. And I'm talking about yard signs to put in your front yard. It has been suggested that our ordinance is in violation of federal constitutional law. I consider that to be a serious issue. I think the case on which that argument is based is an exceptionally unusual case, and it has a lot of ambiguities to it, so I think there's a fair discussion one way or the other whether that argument has merit. On the other hand, it impresses me that the county has more to lose than it has to gain in litigating it, and it simply isn't worthwhile to ignore this and go forward. The alternative that I, there are really three alternatives. One is simply to take the position the ordinance is enforceable, go ahead and enforce it, and if we get sued, we get sued, we defend it. That's what I mean when I think that that is not worth the effort to do. The other one would simply be to repeal the time limits on temporary signs altogether, which doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't think it's necessary. I'm sufficiently unconvinced by the arguments that there are no alternatives. The third alternative is what I'm recommending to you, and that is that you initiate an amendment to the ordinance in a couple of different sections, and I'll get back to that in just a second, to eliminate one part of the time limitations for these temporary signs, and that is when you're talking about an event, the ordinance says that the sign can be put up only a reasonable time before the event, whatever it is, the political signs would be an election, not to exceed 60 days. And then there's a corresponding one for after the election for 10 days. The complaint that's really made is the 60 days before. They obviously want to put it up further than that. My suggestion would be that you consider removing the 60-day requirement, simply put a reasonable time before, so that, for example, you couldn't put up a sign that urged people to vote for Dwight D. Eisenhower or something like that. That, I think, is consistent with the case in question, which I did read when it came down in 2015. And I think it should eliminate this problem. As ambiguous as that case is and as strange as it is to have this kind of strident objection, I can't assure you of that, but that's my best proposal. So what I'm suggesting to you is that you initiate a rezoning. Unlike most of the time when you do this, I'm not suggesting that you formulate the specific provisions to be amended, because we really haven't had time to evaluate what would be necessary to do that. And so what I'm proposing is that you initiate a proposal to amend it and refer it to the Planning Commission. Let the staff work on it in the meantime. Let the Planning Commission then hold public hearings, make its recommendation for you, then you can have a public hearing on it and you can act on it. In the meantime, I would suggest that you authorize me and the zoning administrator to tell the person that's objecting that the provision in question is not going to be enforced against them while this proposal is pending. I think that's only fair. So that's my proposal. I think we have the language here. That's the resolution of intent. That's prepared in accordance with the statute and the ordinance, and the motion refers to that by reference.
5 minutes, you know.
Anybody else have to come in? I'm sorry. I could not help myself.
All we're doing right now is we're not enforcing it.
We're just allowing people to put them up now if they want to do it for the election coming up.
Well, we're not allowing them to do it. We're simply not enforcing it.
Pending
a resolution to this resolution.
Okay.
Anybody else? I do have to have one more comment. Mr. Payne said he was read up on the case. Did anybody else think he was talking about when Eisenhower was running for president? I did cross my mind. And then he went in 2015. I'm sorry, Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, just for your information, I do remember when Eisenhower ran for president.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but
the first time.
Mr. Weaver remembers when Lincoln.
I remember Bob. George Washington also.
Mr. Weaver voted for Thomas Jefferson.
I could not help myself. All right, do we have a motion?
I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors adopt the attached resolution entitled Resolution Number 08-2019 regarding certain exempts. Temporary sign.
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. And we'll now move forward with appointment to project consultant for the James River Water Project, Mr. Dogg.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, so the board was briefed about this previously. This is an appointment of project consultant for the James River Water Project for Mr. Stephen M. Nichols. Although Mr. Nichols is retiring, he's got a lot of institutional knowledge on the James River Water Project. And there's some meetings that are going to be coming up that his institutional knowledge would greatly benefit both JRWA, Louisa County, and Fluvanna County. And so for that, we would request that you appoint him as a project consultant for this for a term to end December 31st, 2019, or prior, depending upon a signed letter.
Okay. For clarity purposes, I think it's probably worth mentioning that he's agreed to do this without pay.
Agreed to do this without pay.
I'm really hoping you were not going to say that since his wife is sitting beside him.
He did reserve the right to complain.
I mean, Mr. O'Brien, we could have taken care of him a little bit, but that's okay.
Well, I just think since we're not mentioning a specific figure for the public's benefit and for transparency purposes, it makes sense to list the fact that at present this is the case.
We're not trying to.
Yeah. And since I've seconded most motions this afternoon, I'd like to make this motion.
Okay.
I move to approve the appointment of Stephen M. Nichols as Fluvanna County Project Consultant for the James River Water Project, with such appointment effective on July 8th, 2019, and ending on December 31st, 2019.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Seager. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Presentations. Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council, EdTech update, Mr. Sorrell. If you would approach your witness chair, sir.
Do you want me to sit down or stand up? How do you guys like your presentation?
As long as they can hear you on that microphone, makes that young lady, I got ready to say Ms. Harris's job easier. Ms. Elise's job easier.
All right. Okay. Good evening. My name's Andy Sorrell, and I've been a resident of the Columbia District for 15 years now. It's hard to believe. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this evening, and I also wanted to thank each of you for your commitment to public service. It's a job that often goes underappreciated, and I appreciate it. Steve, thank you for your commitment and dedication and direction in Fluvanna County over the last number of years. Your leadership has been appreciated and won't soon be forgotten. So best wishes in your retirement. For the last few years, I've been chair of the county's Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Committee, EdTAC, and have served on that committee since it was founded back in 2016. I don't have to tell you that Fluvanna has done a great job of preserving and maintaining its natural, historical, and recreational resources, but we haven't done as good a job as in understanding and capitalizing on how these resources can plug into our local economy and diversify our county's tax base. So, as you know, the EdTech was formed to bridge this gap. It was to connect the dots between the county's economic development and tourism efforts, promoting the best of what Fluvanna has to offer, and driving people here as a destination. EdTech got off to a good start with staff assistance, and back in early 2018, you might recall that we brought you a strategic a tourism strategic plan that was adopted with four main goals. Continuing to build upon our existing tourism marketing efforts, looking at the existing and future needs for tourism infrastructure, i.e. grant opportunities, policy changes, and et cetera. Increasing staff capacity for tourism efforts, and creating more opportunities and services for tourism-related businesses, marketing campaigns, social media, use of that, better web services, and things like that. However, soon after our plan was adopted, the progress that EdTech had been making began to lag. We were meeting monthly, but we really weren't getting anything done. And this was partially due to staff turnover, but it was also because we didn't feel like we had clear direction on what we needed to do. And so because of that lack of progress, we sort of had a hard time getting folks to attend our meetings. And when our initial three-year when most of our initial three-year terms came up for renewal this spring, most of us on the committee felt like we either needed to right the ship or move on. And so we brought our concerns to the Attention County staff and met with Steve and his staff and Ms. Eager at the end of May to come up with a plan to move forward and get us moving again. From those discussions, we recommended changes to our bylaws that you guys took a look at earlier this afternoon, including changing district representation to a more at-large representation, however, with preference still given to district representation when it was available, so that we could have folks in there that were interested to serve that may not be district-specific. Also adding a Farm Bureau representative to the committee to because of our ag and natural resources in the county, in addition to the existing members from the Historical Society and the Chamber. In addition, Mr. Nichols and Ms. Eager both agreed that rather than waiting for you guys to tell us what we should be doing, we should be bringing ideas and projects to you. And so EdTech will be scheduling regular biannual updates with you guys with the board in March and October for a check-in and status report on the work that we've been doing. And while this committee doesn't have a budget, we made sure to time our check-ins when the budget cycle is beginning and before it's adopted. So in case there's any community-supported project, we can bring it to your attention if it needs a minimum amount of funding. So moving forward, the EdTech committee will be geared towards action and will be proactive. Members that can't make the meeting will be encouraged to suggest a replacement so we don't start spinning our wheels again, if they can't attend multiple meetings, that is. And what we're doing now is currently we're working on wrapping up the 101 things to do in Fluvanna, which is a listing of things that can be done in the county. We're also working with county staff on designing and getting a permanent love sign for Fluvanna County that could potentially be installed at Pleasant Grove. The design of that is still up in the air, but that's something that we've been working on. We meet monthly, and at our next meeting on Monday, the 8th, we'll have a presentation from the Palmyra Area Revitalization Committee to share ideas on how we can support one another's activities. And we also plan to be proactive in suggesting policy changes and revisions that may be needed to better support tourism efforts here in the county, things that increase lodging opportunities in Fluvanna, things that direct tax revenue from tourism-related activities towards funding for tourism programs and things like that. So at this point, I'll stop and see if you guys have any questions, but I really just wanted to bring you up to speed on what EdTech was doing and sort of some of the things that we were talking about this spring. And I do want to say that Steve and his staff were very helpful in getting us on a better direction and path and comfortable in getting us to a point where we're ready to continue serving and to do that with increased and renewed vigor. So.
All right, anybody
have
any questions?
No, it's a great and important committee, and so I'm excited to hear that you've got renewed vigor.
Well, we wanted to make sure that we checked in with you. That was an important thing that a number of the committee members told us that without regularly checking in, they didn't feel like we were doing activity that was useful. And so that got folks that, you know, then didn't attend meetings, and then we couldn't have a quorum, and then we didn't get stuff done. And so I think that moving forward, we'll have some new members, as you guys appointed earlier today, I understand, and some of our existing members, and we'll really be able to start taking some action and bringing you things to that relate to tourism, how we can improve those.
What's the conceptual idea of the love sign?
It is still in the works as to what that might be. There's a couple of ideas of basically incorporating Fluvanna-specific things in the design and the L-O-V-E words. We're talking with the school system about potentially helping design that, and that could potentially be something that we could work on later on this summer. But county staff is working on that to figure out exactly where we go next. But as soon as we get ideas on that, we'll be sure to share them.
And with Mr. Spitzer and Mr. Rothwell on board, I think we'll be able to get some movement going, and kind of with some of the bylaws and changes that the board proposed this evening, it'll, you know, kind of invigorate what EdTac's been already doing. And, you know, with some of these projects that are kind of there, that are kind of right at the edge, I think we could push them along a little quicker.
Do you have a secretary? You take minutes.
We do have a, that was another thing that wasn't very clear in the bylaws as to whose responsibilities it was to do the typical things that a committee does. We did have a secretary, and actually in transition and between people coming and going on the committee, Aaron has served in that role and has been keeping us on track to make sure that we're...
That would go in on our website.
Yes, those all minutes should be going on the minutes. We have those. In fact, if they haven't been updated, we can do that simply, I would expect.
And I think one of the biggest things is a lot of times we don't see what's done. Mm-hmm. Like other people may not see what's done. And so we lose track of all the things that you are accomplishing or going at. So I think the more that we have the communication, the better we'll make it.
You guys are a busy board, and you've got a lot of things on your plate. And so I think it's important for the committee to continue to be in front of you and to regularly check in just for an idea of what we're doing and if we're going in the right direction, or if you have ideas on other things that we could be doing or activities that we could be doing. But we're committed, and we want to make sure that we connect those dots to pull things together.
All right. Anyone else? Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We've finished with the closed meeting. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Chair, a couple things. Just remember, next week, July 9th on Tuesday, remember there's a special meeting with the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission for the public hearing for the zoning text amendment. So it'll be a normal Planning Commission meeting. So the board will come to their normal session, but as soon as the text amendment and the public hearing are finished, then the board can leave, and then the Planning Commission will go on.
Remember, we can do again what they did to us. They got us 11 before our
That is at 7 p.m., right, correct. And then
that's
then
at 7
p.m.
Okay. 7:25,
hopefully. And I'd like to invite Mr. Nichols to come join us there.
I don't know if you're going to
I'll dial in. Oh, my phone is I'll tell you right now, it's worth the price of admission just to watch her go.
Oh, my goodness. You think it's going to be easy. It's not going to be easy.
Hey, give her 2 months and she'll be going, y'all want that?
I want to take 2 months.
Hey, she'll be like, I got me a new phone now.
We're look, I bumped into your flight. It's earlier than you thought.
And then just remember, August 7th, we're going to have a 4 p.m. regular meeting, and then there's the board wanted to have the 7 p.m. Work session, joint work session with the Planning Commission to talk about state firewide prevention code and property maintenance code.
All right.
And then a regular meeting at 7 p.m. on the 21st.
We'll get it. Ms. Solis will be sending us an invitation for those things.
Well, how should we rate Mr. Dahl's performance here?
You should right now.
We're not going to rate anything if the word struggling comes to mind.
Just remember, his mistakes will be higher than mine.
His cheeks are quite pink.
I know.
All righty. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Can I have a second?
Exactly.
Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're adjourned. Thank y'all very much for coming out.